So I wanted to start tonight actually by thinking a little bit about science. So this is a really great crowd. I was just telling my coworkers here that the last talk I gave, the last post-eclipse talk that I gave, was actually one that I was preceded by a speaker who was talking about the expansion to the sports facilities here on campus. And he was talking about this to a bunch of people who were working on, who were patrons, big, huge sports fans of the university, actually. And so it was this huge rah-rah talk, and then following his rah-rah talk about the new facilities, then it was my science talk. And that was a little bit harder of a sell, but here tonight, I'm really thankful to be talking to a crowd who's interested in science. And I just thank you for coming out. But like I said, I want to just start by talking a little bit about science and what science really is, at least what it is to me. And for me, one of my favorite scientists is Einstein. And it's not so much just his science that makes me a fan of his, but some of the other thoughts that he had. I really think he was a philosopher in a way as well. And one of the most powerful things that he said that really speaks a lot to me is the idea that imagination is more important than knowledge. That he really recognized in science it was about curiosity and imagination. And so before I dive into the details of my talk here, I really want to engage us in the spirit of science a little bit and have a little bit of an imaginative activity to get us in the spirit of science. And so what I want to do is we're going to play a little game of tug of war. And I have one end of the rope, and you all have the other end of the rope. Go ahead and grab on to the end of the rope. Imagine the rope. All right. Now let's imagine this rope is a frayed rope, and it has all kinds of interesting tidbits and details in it. Okay, so first, let's practice. I'm going to pull on the rope. Good. Imaginations are going. Now you all pull on the rope. All right. So now that you guys have the rope, I want to say thank you so much for coming out tonight and being interested in science and your imagination. I'm really honored to be here. And then, awesome. And I'm really thankful that I win because I have the microphone and the slide controller. Yes. So thank you for engaging me in that little bit of imagination to get us in the spirit of science. So speaking about science and learning, I also wanted to share this idea that it's not a really good way to learn to have someone just tell you something or to even show you. And that's an important mode of learning when we're trying to teach big groups of people. But really what we try and do so, as Jim said, I'm the director of Montana Space Grant, and really one of the things that we try to do is to involve students so that they can really come to an understanding of what it means to be involved in science and, you know, to learn details about what they're actually doing. And that's really what we tried to do with this eclipse ballooning project, was not just to show them what the atmosphere looked like or show them a picture of the eclipse, but to actually involve them in that process. And how did this kind of come about? It's kind of an interesting story, and Burke, our Borealis flight director, our ballooning flight director, is sitting here, and I like to tell a story about, it was actually just a couple of days before we were taking 70 people to see the MAVEN launch in Kennedy, 70 people from Montana and around the country. And I was doing my morning perusal of the news, and I saw this story about a plane and a pilot who accomplished the really difficult task of getting his plane in the really narrow path of an eclipse at exactly the right time, which is a really difficult thing to do because the path was so narrow and the totality lasted such a short amount of time. In order to get his plane in exactly the right place, it was really very tricky. And there was an article about this particular feat when I was going through my morning perusal of the news. And it got me to thinking, you know, why would he do that? Why would folks not just sit in a boat in the ocean and watch the eclipse? Why would they go to this crazy difficult thing of, and then maybe actually miss the eclipse if it didn't work out, and see it from an airplane? And it got me to thinking also about the ballooning program that we have. So I had just recently for NASA done a big survey of all the different high altitude ballooning programs from around the country, where we actually send up balloons to the edge of space and students get to design their own experiments. And I knew that there were about 150 active of these kinds of programs around the country. And so I thought, man, there's an eclipse coming up in 2017, the first one in a long time in the US. And if we could actually get all those ballooning teams involved in this eclipse and show the eclipse from a balloon at the edge of space, then that might really be spectacular. If it's not just the vantage point of an airplane that people tried so hard to do, but actually even higher and looking from the kind of the space perspective. And I did some research and found that it had been done once before from the Australian eclipse in 2012. A group had sent up a high altitude balloon and got GoPro footage of the balloon. And it really was spectacular. And it wasn't actually looking at the sun that was spectacular, which you might kind of think at first. The really amazing thing about looking at the Earth from that perspective is really looking at the Earth. And so the thing that was spectacular was looking at the shadow of the moon. So not looking at the sun, but looking at the shadow of the moon and the effects on the atmosphere was really just amazing. And so I thought, okay, well, someone has done this video before, and yeah, it's really great. And we could get teams to do this all across the country. That would be really very interesting. But in our day and age, if we really wanted to capture people's imagination, if we wanted to maybe get those people who are only going to be interested on eclipse day, so not the people who are going to be interested in science anyway, you know, like you all, and continue to read about it and learn about it later, but the people who are only going to care about it at the time, the only way we're going to do that is if we could share those videos live and stream them live on the internet. And so that was the idea that I set about doing, that we could get all of these teams from around the country and we could send live video to the internet and to NASA TV. And so I set about convincing NASA to do this. Now, mind you, that we had no idea how to do it. This was before live streaming. You know, now we have Facebook Live and YouTube Live, and live streaming to the internet seems kind of like old hat. But this was 2 years before any of that came into being, and we really had no idea how to do it. And so for that reason, and maybe some other like political reasons, I totally got turned down the first time I went and talked to NASA about this idea. But some things changed in the leadership there, and we were able to, behind the scenes here, do a little bit more work about how we might actually carry this into being. And after, you know, many, many challenges, we were able to convince NASA to fund the project and make a go of it. Some of those challenges, this could actually be about 10 slides long if I talked about all the challenges, you know, just like the technology. There were really three key technologies that we needed to come into a being and did kind of at the right time. One was the lightweight computers. So all of our systems were based on Raspberry Pi and Arduino computers. Another one was the miniaturization of radios. So the radios, like a lot of, this is really driven by the drone industry, and radios to send down, like, well, to send down video and different things and to make those really small and lightweight. And then the third thing really was the live streaming, the availability of the live streaming. So without those three technologies coming into being in the last several years, this couldn't have happened. Weight is a challenge because of the FAA flight restrictions. We're not allowed to have any one package weigh more than 6 pounds, and we can't lift more than a total of 12. So we had to be really very lightweight. All the other regulations that come along with flying balloons through commercial airspace, bureaucracy, dealing with this massive collaboration across the U.S., and time, even though we started almost 4 years out. Time was an issue. and the pressure. You know, once we set out to do this huge thing and to be the first group to ever live stream a total solar eclipse from the edge of space, and to do this massive collaboration, then we, you know, brought a lot of pressure on ourselves to carry this through, which was pretty difficult. And one of the other things, too, is just kind of the human side of things. So this is a picture of my son, who was 3 at the time. Right in the middle of all of this actually happened in between our 2 workshops, training all of the students on how to do this. And he got really, really sick, and we had to take him down to Primary Children's Hospital in Salt Lake, and it was really a horrible thing, but it really brought to light for me how important that human aspect is. You know, at that point in time, I was leading this huge national project, but nothing was more important than him and getting him, you know, well. And of course, everyone is dealing with those kinds of situations all the time, maybe not to this extreme all the time, but everyone always has something going on. And you have to remember, when you're asking as much as we asked of our team and asking as much as we are of our students and everyone around the country, remember that they're people too, and to keep that in mind when we're carrying out something so big. But we persevered through all of those challenges that could go on for pages. And for me, this is one of the main reasons what kept me going. So every year, the National Science Foundation asks about 5 questions in a big national survey that they know are common misconceptions in science. And they've been doing this for about 30 years. And every 5 years, they ask the question, does the sun go around the Earth, or does the Earth go around the sun? And the good news is that over 30 years, the percentage of people who say that the sun goes around the Earth has been getting much smaller. The bad news is that the last time this was done in 2014, still 26% of the American public thinks that the sun goes around the Earth, which is really pretty striking. But again, if you kind of consider the human aspect of this and think about the average everyday person who may or may not observe their surroundings. You know, the sun comes up and the sun goes down. And unless you were really paying attention to the little picture in your textbook in class that one day, then you didn't change your mental model that your mind was telling you every day. You didn't change your mind to be thinking about that little drawing of circles in your textbook. And so this, for me, is really telling of our education system, of how we involve people in science to really change their mental models that they have day in and day out. And so my really hope was through the perspective that we were going to be able to show live from the balloons and everything else that NASA was doing, that this statistic might change. And actually, it was really interesting. Just a couple weeks ago, I was in D.C., and I got to meet the guy who's been doing these surveys for NSF for the last 30 years. And he's actually been hired by NASA, by the Science Mission Directorate, to study specifically. They're going to do the survey again in 2018, which is actually 5 years since they did the survey in 2013. But they're looking into specific effects of how this eclipse in 2017 has changed this statistic. So it'll be really interesting to see when they get that research done, how it's really impacted things. I don't want to go into too many details here because this is really, engineering heavy. But if you have questions about this, I can definitely fill you in more later. But just on a very high level, how the system works is we have all of our packages on the balloon, and we have a way to communicate with the balloon if we need to via the Iridium modem. And so this tells us, it also has a GPS connected to it, tells us where the balloon is at all times. We can also send commands through a little short distance radio called an XB that we can actually use to cut the packages away from the balloon as well. And then also we had packages that had a 5.8 gigahertz that sent down the video and a 900 megahertz that sent down the still images. And how did we know how to point all that? Well, the information about where it was because of the Iridium which came through the MSU system. And so we're able to, with a ground station computer, be connected to the internet. And then that was connected to the antenna, which could then, after careful calibration, point at exactly where the balloon is in the sky. The antenna, like the video antenna, is really only about that big around. And so it has to be really pretty carefully pointed in the right direction. And then, so again, that ground station computer is connected to the internet, which then goes through a big server, and I'll talk a little bit more about how that all happened. This right here, the step between getting the video and the images on the ground and then relaying them live onto the internet was keeping me up at night until really like the last 9 months probably before the eclipse. And then the solution actually kind of fell in our lap. But this was a really, really tricky problem. Actually, NASA at first, when I first talked to them, they said, you know, you just create the content and we'll take care of sharing it. But in reality, because all this technology was so new, the live streaming was so new, they couldn't do it. And they had a live stream provider, but they had had huge issues with their live stream provider in the past, and they were completely incapable of doing what we needed to do. But it did work out. So like I said, I can share more about the details if you'd like. So anyway, we developed that whole system. We got through our challenges. And then we had to teach everybody how to use the systems. And we went through lots of discussions, but decided that the best thing to do would be to give everyone a kit and have all the instructions and send them home with something that was working. Because by this point, it was just a year out before the eclipse. And we wanted to make sure that everybody had everything working. They weren't going to worry about getting the basics set up. So everyone came here to Montana State University. We did a practice workshop in May of 2016. And then in July, we had a big workshop. And it was really an amazing thing. Just back of the envelope, we think we kitted something like 40,000 parts to get everybody all their stuff together. And then they built it in a week and tested it. And we sent them home with all their equipment. And thus ensued a year of practice with their equipment and updates to their equipment as well. And this was a time period where I think if a lot of them could come and stab us in the back, they would, the teams, because, you know, it was meant, what we gave them was meant to be tinkered with. And of course, we were going to have updates to software. And, you know, it's a pretty complicated system. It was as simple as we could possibly make it, but of course, it was complicated. And the message that we really wanted to share was this one, to not just practice till you got it right, but practice really till they couldn't get it wrong. And the teams that did this succeeded beautifully in the eclipse. Most of our teams did, really succeeded in some way. But the teams that really had an amazing, amazing experience were the ones that practiced a lot, which is really no surprise when you think about it. But still, it was really a lesson, I think, for people that even though they might have been failing in some of their practice and might have been very frustrated with us and things like that, it was really that frustration and having to fix their systems that really taught them the most about their systems. So when it came to crunch time and eclipse day, if something happened, then they would know how to work it. And so in talking about kind of lessons learned about doing this whole project, I think one of them that, you know, maybe we knew before but really screamed at us with the teams is that if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough. And so those teams who weren't practicing and failing, and pretty much everyone who practiced failed at some point, then they didn't try hard enough. And so that was a huge lesson for us. Another one that was a lesson learned was really about teamwork. I got to chat with a lot of the teams. We had an eclipse ballooning conference here about a month ago. And when I chatted with a lot of the teams that were there, this was really the common thread, was the teams who did really well were the ones who practiced and had good teamwork. So they talked about how they really gelled as a team and how they were able to delineate tasks in a way that really enabled them to accomplish what they wanted to do through their teamwork. And I just, this is a shout out to our team here. So this is me giving a thumbs up, telling myself, I can do this, I'm gonna make it. So this was me laying in a hospital bed 4 days before the eclipse, and I had emergency abdominal surgery 4 days before the eclipse, and it was really a horrible moment in a way because I was thinking for a while I wasn't gonna make it to see totality. But I did, in fact, like the people at the hospital, like I became known as Eclipse Lady. I actually had to come back for another emergency surgery a month later, and they're like, oh my God, it's Eclipse Lady. Like, what are you doing back? So they really rallied to like get me patched up and going. But this is our team packing up while I was supposed to be there helping them pack up and was sitting in the hospital instead. This is the team after they were done packing up all the vehicles to go down to Rexburg here. And it was pretty amazing, actually. I think the experience of having that emergency surgery really brought out for me how powerful the team was and how the team came together, you know, when the leader wasn't there. And, you know, my family came together as a team to help me get down there. And so this is a huge lesson learned on how important that teamwork is. So then the big day came. I mean, it was awesome. How many of you got to see totality? A lot of you? Awesome. I had never seen a total solar eclipse before, so this was an amazing experience for me. Kelly Gorham came down to Rexburg with us. He's the main MSU photographer. And he has some amazing pictures that are online. If you go and look at, if you just kind of Google eclipse ballooning, the MSU page will come up and his photos are there. So if you're interested in any of his photos, you can download them. And so, okay, I've been talking about all this project, and now I want to actually show you a little bit of footage. And I think we're going to turn down the lights for the video here. But first, before I show the video, I wanted to point out that this particular image is actually really interesting. It was taken by Portland State Community College, and it's actually a combination of 70 different images put together. But it's great because you can actually see here at the bottom the blackness of space from the earth of the shadow, and then you can actually see the corona around the sun. It's pretty cool. But you could only make that by doing that big composite of 70 different images.
Get ready.
Ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Got them above us at this point. That's, yeah, it was pretty good. And they saw us, actually, the pilots of the research planes, the 57s, yeah. So that gives you a feel for what some of the footage looked like. So now back to the boring slides. I wanted to give you a little bit of a feel for some of the highlights of our project. But before I get into that, I wanted to give you an idea of highlights of the NASA effort in general. And this is specifically talking about the NASA effort. But of course, there were some other efforts going on as well by other entities. But the NASA one was really the main one. It was actually the biggest digital event ever for any government agency. And it was a 7 times bigger event than the next highest traffic one, which was New Horizons at Pluto. So when they say digital event, that means, you know, all the online content, NASA TV content, etc. And so it was just a huge event. And the audience was comparable to Super Bowl size. And so to get into that kind of reach of a Super Bowl tells you that it really was an event for the general public that really a lot of people got involved in. And just with the TV content of their TV program that they also showed online, they had more than 600 million views of that, individual views. And of the live streams, which all of our, we were part of the TV content as well, but then all of our live streaming of from the edge of space, more than 60 million unique views. And it was the by far the most followed event on social media. And this is non-unique, right? Some people follow NASA on more than one social media platform, but 5 billion non-unique users. So it was just a huge reach. And actually, the University of Michigan has done some further studies, and they found actually that 88% of the American public participated in the eclipse in some way. And actually, the majority of those 88% did it with their own two eyes. So they got a hold of eclipse glasses and actually took a look at the partial eclipse, or if they were in totality, participated. Of course, some just watched, you know, online or on TV, but really the majority got involved themselves. So that's really amazing. The highlights that I wanted to talk about here, we really had four main goals for the project. The four main goals were public reach, the partnerships we were going to develop, the students, involving the students, and science. So the first of those, the public reach, we're just putting together all of the final reports, and so getting the final numbers crunched, but not counting our Louisiana team, which was part of the like NASA TV broadcast from Indiana. They actually, we had something like 25 million people learned about the eclipse ballooning project via TV or newspaper, etc., before the eclipse. So that's pretty amazing that there were so many articles and everything highlighting the project. We were, you know, on some Discovery Channel programs and stuff, and our team will maybe tell you some not so fun stories about being part of something like that and how you have to reenact things over and over, which is maybe not so much fun, but it was great to be part of that. One of the things that's maybe not so fun about the public reach was, as I'll talk to you later about the bacteria experiment that we did, brought out the crazies, let me tell you. And the talk that's later by David Sands about bacteria, maybe he can steal all the crazies away from me, but because we did the space biology experiment with this, I couldn't answer my phone for a really long time because I got these calls from people saying, like, you're a psycho, you know, how dare you take bacteria into the air, you know, what are you trying to do, you know, kill us all, and of course, they're not going to listen to you about the fact that there are more of this type of bacteria on the bottom of your shoe than there were on the balloons we took into the air, and there's bacteria in the air anyway, and of course, they don't listen to you, they just scream at you and call you a psychopath, which gets a little frustrating after a while, so you don't answer your phone anymore. And it also brought out the flat earthers like none other. It was really, really crazy, you know, trying to tell you that all your cameras, you know, lied to you, and really there was no curvature in the earth. No. But anyway, but the partnerships were a huge part of our success. So we really developed partnerships with almost every major ballooning entity in the U.S. So like Google Loon, for example, Google is really trying to create a platform for providing internet to third world countries. Right now, they're specifically focusing on Africa and doing that from balloon platforms. So their balloons stay in the air between 100 and 150 days and provide internet. This is one of the ways that we thought we were maybe going to be able to share the live stream at first, but they weren't ready in time. But nonetheless, they did sponsor us in a lot of ways and encourage us, so that was really great. Worldview is actually a company out of Tucson that is going to take people up to the edge of space in these capsules. Their idea is basically to provide space or space-like tourism where you can see the curvature of the Earth and the blackness of space, but on a really calm, gentle ride, unlike some of these other platforms that, you know, you have to go on a rocket. And their other selling point is that they will have a bar. And then Raven Industries, which is was also a huge supporter. Raven, they make the balloons. They make the big NASA balloons. They also make all the Macy's Day balloons as well. So they were a great supporter. And then Stream. Stream was by far our biggest collaborator. And they're not a ballooning entity, but these were the people who saved our bacon, who came in when we were really stressed about how we were going to share all these live views. And it was just a crazy event where they happened to be at a professional soccer game and our South Carolina team happened to be doing a balloon flight there. They're doing the live video to the Jumbotron there, which is easy to a Jumbotron, right? But then how you get it to the internet? Well, what Stream does is share live video. They do the social media thing, but they're mainly meant for companies to be able to share different live video streams. And so they basically do exactly what we needed to have done. And so we actually brought the capability to NASA. NASA actually purchased the capability for other people to use. And so that all worked out really fantastically. By far, for me, and I'm sure pretty much everyone who was involved in the project, the most meaningful thing that we did really was involve the students. So we had about 900 college and high school students from 32 different states. That made up 55 teams. And this statistic, we actually, just because we're, like I said, crunching all the numbers now and getting this, I actually kind of like this statistic here, which you may not think is that great, but to have 33% women who are mostly, most of the students were, you know, engineering and science majors and things like that, who come from fields and majors that have something like 25% female participation. It was really great to see that our number here was actually quite a bit higher than that, which speaks to the project being interesting and tough and worth doing. And 25% of our students were underrepresented students, which was really fantastic and much higher than the national average as well. So I wanted to, you know, this is a science talk, and I'm actually almost out of time, and I'm not going to go into too many details here, but I did want to share a little bit about the science we did. So like I said, we did the space biology experiment in collaboration with NASA Ames. And the idea here was that many of the student teams flew these little, what are called coupons, they're only about that big, with little bacteria samples on them, onto the balloons, because the stratosphere where the balloons fly is actually analogous in many ways to the surface of Mars. So the pressure and temperatures that they experience there are very similar. And the question here is that how careful do we really have to be, or we need to know exactly what we might be contaminating other planets or other bodies that we visit? So even though there are really strict regulations on exactly how clean spacecraft have to be, you know, what if this common bacteria that's in the soil all around here and is actually this particular type that they're studying is actually really very resistant to radiation and could possibly go dormant in a space travel environment, could it actually survive and live like on the surface of Mars, for example? And so that's the question they're asking, and really studying these resilient kind of bacteria to make sure they understand if they accidentally hitched a ride on one of our spacecraft to Mars, for example, that it's not going to then flourish there and, you know, contaminate a different planet. And so this is actually part of a program at NASA called the Planetary Protection Program. And it was interesting, actually, during the eclipse, because the analogy that is not true normally in the atmosphere compared to Mars is the level of sunlight. And so during the eclipse, however, the level of sunlight was more similar to that on Mars, and so that made it more interesting. They're still analyzing the results of this experiment. They anticipate that they'll have the results ready in January. So then we and they will be sharing those results. One of the other bits of science that we did, we talk a lot about this sharing the live view and all the awesome video from the eclipse, but we also had a sister project that flew special balloons, weather balloons, that they're exactly the same setup that the National Weather Service flies every day, twice a day, from the weather stations around the world, in the U.S. and around the world, to understand, the weather and to study the atmosphere. So we actually did this during the eclipse in many stations across the U.S. to look at how the atmosphere responded to the eclipse. So you have this dark shadow that's like night, basically, screaming across the U.S., and how did that affect the atmosphere? And you can actually use that also then to inform you more about the atmosphere by looking at this particular instance of a crazy event happening in the atmosphere. And I'm, again, not going to go into too many details here, but this is just some data about what happens to the planetary boundary layer. So this is what it normally looks like just from night, night and day coming. The boundary layer is basically the difference between where the surface features interact with atmosphere versus when they don't. So above that layer, you lose all the details and interaction with the surface. But that changes depending on what the sunlight is. And so anyway, this is just some data comparing to how much of an effect the eclipse actually did have on that boundary layer. So I did want to just kind of bring it back, since I'm out of time here, and share that we were really proud to be the first to live stream a total solar eclipse from the edge of space. And we were also the first to fly a constellation of balloons across a continent. So those were really proud accomplishments. And of course, it was due to a huge amount of people. I'm up here getting to tell you the story, but it was a huge amount of people that had to come together to make this happen. A lot of people say, there's another eclipse in 2024. Are you going to do this again in 2024? And my answer is, well, no, we're not going to do this exact same thing for sure in 2024. Because what made it exciting this time, the live streaming and all of the, boundaries we were pushing on technology that made students want to get involved, is going to be old hat by 2024. So it'll be boring. So we're definitely not going to do the same thing in 2024. But will we do something? I don't know. We have to wait and see what the exciting technology is going to be. Maybe there'll be something better to do. We'll see. And we're also still collecting results, lots of presentations at scientific meetings and that kind of thing happening. So it's not really done yet. A lot of people also ask me, are we so glad that the Eclipse Project is over? And I'm like, well, it's not over. We're still working on lots of things, including evaluation. So in order to do projects like this in the future, it's really important to evaluate the projects. And speaking of that, actually, in the back of the room, there are some little slips of paper that have just a few questions on them. And so it's just kind of evaluating this sharing of our project. So if you don't mind, if you have a minute to answer those quick questions on that piece of paper, I'd appreciate that. It would be part of our evaluation. And I wanted to just conclude with this slide again. And acknowledge that you'll never remember what I just told you today. Nobody, you can't really listen to a talk and expect to remember it. But I sincerely hope that all of you will be involved in some kind of science that you will really understand in the near future. Thank you so much.